25 Celsius for the likes of Belfast, but across eastern Scotland, 26 or 27 Celsius is likely, but always cooler in the north and northwest of Scotland, with 19 Celsius for Stornoway, 15 in Shetland. And it remains warm and hot as we head in towards Friday and the weekend, perhaps the highest temperatures across western Britain.
Staff Danaos, thank you. Now on Radio 4, it's our Book of the Week. In permanent present tense, the neuroscientist Suzanne Corkin tells Henry Molaison's story and what he taught the world about the science of memory. In 1953, Henry underwent an experimental brain operation which alleviated his devastating epilepsy but left him unable to form new long-term memories. Following the procedure, recollections of whatever Henry saw or heard slipped away within a minute. In today's episode, emotional memory troubles Henry. Deborah Weston is the reader.
Henry seldom shared his introspections with anyone, so for the most part, we had to infer his emotional life from observing his behavior. During our conversations with him, he seemed happy and content. He smiled often and rarely complained. Still, he did have occasional dark episodes when he could become frustrated, sad, aggressive, or uneasy. Typically, these negative emotions would dissipate as soon as he was distracted. At the time of Henry's first visit to the Clinical Research Center at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in 1966, his mother was in hospital after undergoing minor surgery. Henry and his father had visited his mother in the hospital that morning, and by the time he met up with the chair of the psychology department, Hans Lucas Teuber, who would drive him to the research center, Henry only had a vague sense that something was wrong with her. During the trip to the center, Teuber repeatedly explained to Henry where his mother was and that she was fine, but Henry had a lingering feeling of uneasiness about his parents, wondering whether all was well. As he settled into his room at the research center, his anxiety dissolved. We told him he could call home, but he no longer knew why he would want to do so. The next afternoon, however, Henry told a nurse that he thought his mother was in the hospital. He had regained some inkling overnight that his mother was ill. At that time, it was unclear what would account for the recovery of this memory. We speculated that Henry was simply less tired than the day before. Since then, however, numerous experiments have demonstrated that sleep sometimes improves memory consolidation. During sleep, memories may be reactivated and replayed, making them stronger and less susceptible to disruption. Different kinds of memories are enhanced by different stages of sleep, which in turn recruit different brain structures. The hospitalization of Henry's mother had dual representation in his brain, consisting of a factual element and an emotional element. Henry quickly lost the factual content. Mother is in the hospital having minor surgery. But the vague emotional content, something is wrong, lingered for days. Without a functioning hippocampal circuit, Henry could not preserve the facts about his mother's hospital stay in his long-term memory. But a larger network of brain areas, the limbic system and its connections, helped maintain his anxiety. The hippocampus is no longer believed to mediate emotions, whereas the amygdala is seen as the hub of emotional responses. This complex structure receives information from all the senses and from brain areas that process feelings of well-being and distress. The amygdala also sends information back to many of the same areas, creating vast networks specialized for emotional perception, expression, and memory. The removal of Henry's amygdala and hippocampus caused a malfunction in his basic limbic circuitry, so it was reasonable to expect that his ability to process emotions might be altered. But with parts of his limbic system still functioning, he could feel anxious about his parents and was doomed to re-experience this emotion. Memory can be a burden. It forces us to revisit unpleasant events from the past. But without his memory, Henry could never properly mourn or process the losses that are an inevitable part of life. In 1966, when Henry was 40, his father died. Mrs. Meliason told me that Henry was quite depressed after her husband's death, but did not consciously grasp that his father was gone unless someone reminded him. 7 months later, Mrs. Meliason asked us not to tell Henry that his father was dead, because he might react as if hearing the sad news for the very first time. Now Henry's sole caregiver, Mrs. Meliason secured a place for him at a workplace for mentally disabled people. There he performed simple, repetitive jobs, such as packaging multicolored rubber balloons into small bags. In the spring of 1970, Henry experienced a breakdown. While packaging balloons, he went into a totally unexpected and unprecedented rage. He jumped up, shouted that someone had taken his balloons, and yelled that he had no memory and was no good to anyone and was just in the way. He threatened to kill himself and said he was going to hell and would take his mother with him. He then turned to a wall and began banging his head against it forcefully. A doctor arrived and injected Henry with a sedative, and after he calmed down, he was driven home to his mother. Henry resumed work the next day without incident, but seemed nervous. Then in May, he developed a new symptom, severe stomach pains, especially in the mornings when he was scheduled to go to the workplace. My colleagues and I felt an obligation to ensure that Henry was looked after, so we decided to bring Henry to the Clinical Research Center for an extended visit and medical evaluation at no cost to the Meliasons. Hans Lucas Teuber drove to East Hartford to pick up Henry. He pulled up to the one-story house on Crescent Drive, a small building in cream-colored wood with white trim. Inside, he found Henry neatly dressed with a small suitcase packed for a planned stay of 3 weeks. Mrs. Meliason thanked Teuber for his assistance and remarked that this would be her first vacation from her role as Henry's carer in nearly 20 years. She was looking forward to visiting people without Henry and going out in the evenings. During those 3 weeks, Henry underwent a thorough medical examination, but his stomach pain seemed to have subsided. Henry remained calm but disoriented throughout his stay. One evening, Teuber found him sitting in his darkened room, a crossword puzzle nearby. He asked Henry whether he was feeling any physical discomfort. "Well, mentally, I'm uncomfortable," he said, "to be so much trouble to everybody, not to remember." He searched for the right words, and I keep debating with myself if I've said anything that I shouldn't have or done something that I shouldn't have done. Teuber reassured him and said that he would call his mother that night. In an unusual moment, Henry turned to the subject of his father. "There I'm having a debate with myself about my dad. Now, on the one side, I think he's been called. He's gone. But on the other, I think he's alive." He began to tremble. I can't figure it out." Henry was not an anxious man, but the conversation with Teuber revived his sadness and uncertainty surrounding the death of his father. He could not hold on to the fact long enough that his father had died in order to come to terms with that death. He had no memory of saying goodbye to his father, attending his funeral, visiting his grave, or being comforted by the love and sympathy of his family and friends. The trembling that Teuber observed was a physical expression of Henry's emotional state. After 3 weeks at the Clinical Research Center, it was time for Henry to return home. He did not complain about abdominal pain during the entire visit, suggesting that the problem was stress-related. Teuber drove Henry back. Mrs. Meliason came to the door and remarked how well Henry looked. The two of them embraced without speaking for a few moments. Henry stroked her cheeks and shoulders. Studying how Henry forgot gave us a better understanding of how we remember. In 1986, we designed a series of experiments with Henry to clarify the circumstances under which forgetting occurs. Conventional wisdom held that amnesic patients forgot information more quickly than healthy individuals. To test this theory, we showed Henry and a control group 120 slides, each with a different, complex, colorful magazine picture depicting animals, buildings, interiors, people, and objects. Henry viewed each picture for 20 seconds and, as instructed, tried to remember them. In subsequent testing, we asked him to look at two pictures side by side, one studied and one new, and to say which one he thought he had seen before. We call this kind of memory retrieval recognition memory, consciously choosing between two possible answers, one of which is right. To everyone's surprise, the information that Henry encoded in 20 seconds allowed him to recognize the pictures as well as, if not better than, the control group after 1 day, 3 days, and 1 week. More astonishing still was the discovery that Henry's recognition memory was normal 6 months after his initial exposure to the pictures. How could Henry achieve normal picture recognition scores when most other indices of his long-term memory pointed to failure? He remembered virtually nothing about his everyday life and bottomed out on every other test of new declarative or explicit memory. I was at a loss to explain the picture recognition results theoretically. Describing the experiment to colleagues, I speculated that Henry just had a vague feeling in the pit of his stomach that helped him decide in one of two ways. Around this time, researchers in mathematical psychology proposed that the process of recognition consisted of two independent retrieval processes. In 1980, cognitive psychologist George Mandler formalized two kinds of recognition memory, familiarity and recollection. Familiarity relies on fast, automatic processes, whereas recollection is a slower, intentional use of memory that demands a person's attention. We all have had the experience of seeing someone on the street whose name we do not know, but with a vague sense that we've met them before. This kind of recognition is based on familiarity. It happens automatically. Henry engaged this process when he identified the magazine pictures he had seen. Conversely, when we meet an old friend on the street, we easily recall in great detail all the good times we've shared. This kind of recognition is based on recollection, a process that demands effort and attention for searching our memory stores. This process depends on an intact hippocampus. Because of the damage caused to Henry's during his operation, he was unable to engage it in his daily life and on most formal tests of his memory. Henry's unexpected test results in the 1980s revealed a crucial fact about the division of labor in the brain. Familiarity and recollection are managed by independent processes in separate brain circuits, one preserved in Henry's brain and the other destroyed. Henry's conscious declarative memory was broken. He was left with only vague feelings of familiarity. He could not evaluate whether these mental impressions were trustworthy, but perhaps that did not matter because they provided content in his life. The sense of familiarity that permeated his world helped him cope with his disabling amnesia. It grounded him and gave him the feeling he was among family at the Clinical Research Center.
At the same time tomorrow, Deborah Weston continues reading Permanent Present Tense by Suzanne Corkin. The abridger was Richard Hamilton and the producer, Elizabeth Allard. The shipping forecast follows shortly here on Radio 4 after we've gone sailing by. sailing by. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Thursday the 18th of July. The general synopsis at 1800, high West Seoul 1028, expected Malin 1029 by 1800 Thursday, low Southern England 1023, losing its identity. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours, Viking North at Sierra, southwesterly 4 or 5, veering westerly or northwesterly 5 or 6, occasional rain, moderate or good, occasionally poor. South at Sierra, westerly 4 or 5, veering northwesterly 5 or 6, occasionally 7 later in southeast, occasional drizzle, good, occasionally poor. Northeast 40s, westerly 3 or 4, veering northwesterly 5 or 6 later.